now, it's time to sit back and enjoy the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Broadcast.
He rode a blazing saddle, he wore a shining star. His job to offer battle to bad men.
Here at Quark's, customer satisfaction is our primary concern.
I'd say we just found our way into a wormhole.
I'm Kira Norris.
Lieutenant Commander Worf, reporting for duty, sir.
To the best crew any captain ever had. This may be the last time we're all together.
This will shortly become a leading center of commerce and of scientific exploration. And for Starfleet, one of our most important posts.
It is quite simply, Commander. The journey you have always been destined to take.
Sensors are not functioning.
We've lost all contact with the space station.
What the hell is happening out there?
Shields up. Damage report.
Battle stations.
I'm Captain Benjamin Sisko. Welcome to Deep Space Nine.
Listen to the prophets. A Deep Space Nine Two True Freaks presentation with Sean Engel and Andrew Leyland.
And now with 100% more Paul Spataro.
Hey, everybody, and welcome to Listen to the Prophets. This is our second episode. I'm Paul Spataro, and I am joined by my fellow crew members, Mr. Andrew Leyland.
Hello.
And Mr. Sean Engel.
Hello, everyone.
Today we are covering episode number 2-3, A Man Alone. Are we jumping right in, or do we have any pre-synopsis discussion?
I think the only thing we have to mention about this one before we go into it is that there was some confusion amongst us, because this was actually, was this the third episode film, but the first episode shown after the pilot? So when we were watching them, I've watched them in the order they were made, not the order they were transmitted. Which doesn't matter, because there's no continuity between these two shows particularly, but...
Yeah, these are pretty much both standalone episodes, at least at this point in time.
Yeah, there's a little bit of world building in here, but it's nothing major where, like, we'll get in, like, up around season 5 where episodes lead into the next one. So, yeah, it doesn't really matter right now if you're watching them out of order. So, I think it'll work either way.
All right, yeah, and that's why I introduce the episode in such a flippant way with my unique comedy styling. You can just hear the laughter, right?
Well, it's certainly unique.
So, okay, I'll jump right into the synopsis.
Voyage to Deep Space Nine, where Security Officer Odo must confront a notorious criminal from his past.
He went to prison for murder. I sent him there.
Now, justice becomes an issue of life and death.
You're not going to take the law into your own hands.
Watch me.
He was afraid that Odo would kill him.
Who might want to frame you for murder?
I am temporarily relieving you of duty.
Next time on Star Trek Deep Space Nine.
Now, I've gotten my synopsis for this episode from Wikipedia, which I find actually does a pretty good job of giving descriptions of the episode. They're detailed enough, and yet they don't go on forever, or at least it seems like they don't. Perhaps as I read it, it'll seem longer. I don't know. During an idle conversation about how the newly opened Bajoran wormhole has increased the number of new faces on the station, Quark and Odo observe an argument between Miles and Keiko O'Brien. Odo wonders what the argument is about, and Quark informs him that Keiko does not enjoy life aboard DS9. Suddenly, Odo takes note of one of Quark's customers and orders the man to leave the station. When he refuses, the two begin brawling until Sisko breaks it off. As he leaves the bar, Odo gives the man 26 hours, the length of time in a Bajoran day, to leave the station. In Sisko's office, Odo explains that the man's name is Ibudan, and he smuggled goods to Bajorans during the Cardassian occupation of Bajor. Some Bajorans consider Ibudan a hero, but Odo claims Ibudan let a young girl die because her parents did not have funds for the medical supplies she needed. Odo later arrested Ibudan for murdering a Cardassian officer, but when the occupation ended, he was set free. happens. Sisko tells Odo that he cannot arrest Ibadan now because the man has not broken any laws. Odo simply says, "Watch me." However, against Odo's protests, Sisko forbids this. Later, Ibadan is killed in a hollow suite, and one of Ibadan's friends tells Sisko and Kira that Ibadan told him he was afraid Odo would kill him. Further evidence points to Odo, in fact. Odo himself points out that only a shapeshifter could have killed Ibadan, given the available evidence. While the man who reported Ibadan's fear of Odo is discussing the murder in Quark's bar, Quark tells him that Odo is not a killer. The man is surprised given Odo is Quark's worst enemy, and Quark says he is the closest thing Odo has to a friend. Amid calls for Odo to be put in jail, Bashir discovers evidence that Ibadan was conducting medical experiments. As Ibadan was neither a doctor nor a scientist, Bashir decides to conduct further tests. Meanwhile, Sisko informs Odo that he is temporarily removing Odo from the investigation of Ibadan's murder. Odo is insulted by Sisko's claim that he personally does not believe Odo is guilty, because he knows that it is not true. Hostility towards Odo among the station's civilian population grows. Bashir's sample from Ibadan's container begins to grow into something, but he is not sure what. Keiko O'Brien decides to start a school, but in the meantime a mob forms outside Odo's office. Sisko tries to calm the crowd, insisting that they are looking for a way to express their anger and not real justice. But Bashir tells him he has new evidence. The sample is growing into a clone of Ibadan. The version of Ibadan who is killed was also a clone created so that Odo could be framed for murder. Since no one else's DNA would be detected at the scene, Odo would be a prime suspect. Odo eventually finds and arrests the real Ibadan and charges him with murdering his clone. Ibadan's latest clone has already matured and begun a new life. The end. I saw this one as very, very, a very conscious attempt to continue that new sheriff in town dynamic that we discussed from the pilot. How, it just seems like a classic story of, you know, the sheriff and, in this case, you know, the sheriff protecting the innocent man when all evidence is against him. And it also seemed very derivative of Court Martial from the original series.
Yeah, I could see that. I also sort of like the aspect that not only could this be a sort of Western show with Sisko being out on the frontier of space, having to deal with this sort of lawlessness going on, but also of this also being a sort of a precursor to the CSI type shows. You get a lot of it's not only a Western, but it's also a detective show. You've got Odo doing investigating. You've got Dr. Bashir doing scans for DNA and all this. So it's not only, you know, a science fiction show, not only a Western, but it's also like a crime drama as well. It's amazing the breadth this show can the breadth that the genre or the genres that the show can actually scoop into. It's really nice.
Yeah, I thought this was a murder mystery in space, which essentially it is, with the twist that the murderer is murdering his own clone, which only happens in Spider-Man comic stories and science fiction. For the most part, I thought this was pretty damned entertaining, but largely because of the character dynamics. I think Quark and Odo are really starting to gel together in this one, and they're really becoming what we will see them evolve into as the story goes along. They don't like each other, but they kind of do like each other, but they will never admit to each other that they like each other. There's a very Spock-McCoy dynamic going on between the two of them, in that Odo kind of acknowledges that he needs Quark, and Quark definitely needs Odo, and they keep each other honest.
And I think you could almost play the Odd Couple theme music as the two of them.
Yes, yeah, they're very definitely trying to play the Odd Couple. I just thought the ending to this one let the side down a bit. I thought the ending where Sisko basically spells out what the metaphor is was a little bit preachy and a little bit on the nose. Although I did like the idea that Odo, who is very black and white in his viewpoint, is suddenly accused of murder and realizing that, oh, well, maybe there's a bit more to this.
Yeah, I liked that aspect of it. It just, some of the stuff seemed a little convenient to me for plot purposes. I'm not sure that you find some sort of experiment in the guy's chambers and say, hey, let's let this just grow. You know, I just didn't seem like something you would do, except for the fact that it's going to help them to solve the mystery, which they don't really actually know that when they decide it. It seemed a little convenient on that. On the ending, I'm looking at my notes now. To pull back the curtain a little bit, we were just discussing the fact that we had actually planned to do this 2 weeks ago, but we weren't unable to get our schedules lined up. So, unfortunately, it's been 2 weeks since I wrote my notes. In my notes, I wrote Scooby-Doo unmasking.
Yeah, the unmasking at the end is very weak. But the opening pre-credit sequence is quite weak as well.
Yeah, the whole thing with Dr. Bashir and Jadzia with the goofy, floaty, holographic ball. That was
what's that got to do with the story?
Absolutely. It's just a sort of, you know, once again portray Dr. Bashir as the overly horny, sort of new to the frontier type character. And I'm hoping we get to the Bashir that I know and love from the later seasons pretty quickly, because right now Bashir is the one character that's really starting to grate on my nerves in these early episodes.
I think it's more in the second season that we start to get the Bashir that we want. But yeah, Paul's synopsis and the synopsis in my Deep Space Nine Companion just completely lop off that prologue, and it doesn't matter. You don't remember when the original Star Trek would start, and it started normally with a big action beat that led into the credits, that led you into watching the story. And by the time we get to The Next Generation, we've got pre-credit sequences that are nothing to do with the story. Unfortunately, I think Deep Space Nine gets over this really quickly, because that prologue was duller than dirt, and it makes you think that this is going to be a dull episode, which it isn't. Other than the rather weak ending, this is actually quite a good show.
I would agree with you. I'm looking to my notes, and I see where it says Bashir still immature and clumsy. They don't know what to do with him yet. And I remember, we're going to get to it eventually, but I remember there's an episode later on when Bashir and O'Brien don't like each other, and then by the end of the episode they've bonded, and I'm pretty sure that's about the point when you start getting the real Bashir.
Yeah, I think that's something. I know there's one where they go down, Bashir and O'Brien go down to Bajor to kind of work some sort of thing that one of them is considered to be some sort of prophet or some sort of priest or some sort, and I think that's where they start bonding. Maybe I'm thinking differently. But yeah, the Bashir at the beginning of the show is nothing more than just a horny teenager, and it feels really out of place for the show.
Especially knowing where it's going to go. I'm not sure. It's impossible at this point for me to put it in perspective and say, if I were watching this and didn't know where the show was going to go, what would I think about this portrayal of Bashir?
Yeah, I'd probably be siding on the fact that, you know, he's going to be the character, he's going to be the Wesley of Deep Space Nine for me, you know, viewing it right now in a vacuum.
The other weakness, just to put them out of the way on this episode, is I also felt like they weren't exactly sure what they were going to do with Sisko and Dax, if they were going to try. It almost felt like they said, let's see how this develops and how everybody thinks about it and how the actors' chemistry works together, whether or not we're going to try and put romantic tension in between the two of them, or if we're going to really make them have more of a mentor-protege relationship. And obviously they went for the latter, but it looks like at this point they didn't really know which way they wanted to go. What do you think about that? Because that was my perception.
Yeah, they're very much playing with the idea that there's going to be a relationship between the two of them. But then they have the scene where Sisko says, no, go for your life, Doctor. Was that in last week's episode or this one? See, because of the 2 weeks, we're forgetting. But anyway, Sisko basically gives Bashir permission to pursue Dax.
Yeah,
but that kind of goes against what we were seeing Because I agree with you.
They could have easily had made it that he gave him that permission, but then regrets it later, and, you know, he wants to sue Dax, and now you have a love triangle of some sort going on. I mean, they could have gone for that. I'm really glad they didn't.
No, I am, because that's just mushy. I much prefer the idea that Dax and Sisko just remained good friends.
I like the mentor-mentee kind of thing going on, too, which they didn't pursue as much later on. But in the beginning, they had a little bit of that going, and I like that.
Yeah, I much preferred that relationship. And also, you do get the impression that they are going to have Dax Thor towards Bashir. But she never does, which is another thing about Deep Space Nine that I like. Ultimately, he does end up with a Dax, but he doesn't end up with this one. And it fit, because it doesn't fit her character that she would be attracted to him. Who she does ultimately end up with fits in her character perfectly. But that's what I'm saying. This episode, it's one that you look back on, and knowing where everybody goes, it gives this a little bit more emotional resonance than perhaps it would have if we were watching this and had never seen the series before. Because certainly whilst Quark and Odo have got a relationship straight off the bat, the other ones were all based around which actors seem to spark off which actor. So when Michael Dorn and Terry Farrell sparked off at each other, the writers started writing to that. And when Cole Meany and Alexander Siddig started sparking off each other, that's where the relationship between those two came from. And you've not got that yet. A lot of these scripts will have been written before they cast the actors.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think we'll also see, in the next episode that we cover, we'll see the relationship between Kira and Odo start to blossom. So yeah, in these beginning few shows, they really don't know who's going to pair up and what kind of relationships are going to be built, and it's kind of nice to be here on the ground floor and see, knowing what we do know, where things are going to go from here.
And it's those interrelationships that make this one interesting, because this is the first time that we see Nog.
Mm-hmm.
And his relationship with Jake is interesting, because Sisko, see, you don't want to say that he's a bigot, but he forbids Jake from playing with Nog, largely because he's a Ferengi.
Well, I didn't really, well, I could kind of see that a bit, but it's more, I kind of saw it more as, he's a troublemaker, rather than being a Ferengi,
I didn't want to go down it's a bigotry tract, because I don't think that's what the writers were going for. I think the writers were going for, like you say, I think they were going for, that kid's a bad influence, I don't want you playing with him.
And that was one of the things that I had a note on that I actually enjoyed. Sisko is being a good father. He's saw that his son got in trouble, and he's not letting him get away with it. He's not letting him get off. So, that was one of the things that, you don't get to see that in Next Gen. You don't see anyone really being a parent. Beverly Crusher pretty much allowed Wesley to get away with anything.
Yeah, Jake, Wesley just did what he wanted to.
Yeah, Jake messes up. He gets grounded. He gets in trouble. So I like that, there's actual parenting going on the show. It gives it a more realistic feel, a feel that I can actually latch onto than just people traveling around in space and doing whatever they want.
And I love the little practical joke that they planted those little ants on people.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I thought that was quite funny.
It was a goofy little bit, and, it's what kids would do. And it also kind of leads into the character of Keiko and, her desire to sort of see the kids on the station have a legitimate, school and a legitimate plan, and to try and keep them out of trouble. So,
which also seemed to play very, very well with the whole frontier town aspect of the show. The school with kids of different ages, with one school marm. That lent it more of that Western feeling, I think, and I liked that aspect of the show. I thought the Jake and Nog relationship seemed very real. I thought that's the way it would be. If you stick those kids together, at first they might kind of, measure each other, glance at each other sideways kind of thing. But eventually they're going to be attracted to each other as friends, if only because they're the only two kids on the station. The kids of their age group, at least.
Oh, yeah.
I did notice, they had no characterization whatsoever, really, for Rom at this point. In fact, he's played totally differently. His voice is different. Same actor, but not not done in the same way.
Yeah, Rom seems a bit more just like your stereotypical Ferengi. He doesn't seem sort of the cowering sort of, you know, Bud Abbott to, or Lou Costello to Bud Abbott in the way of the Quark and Rom relationship. You know, and later on in the series, he seems sort of like, you know, just a secondary subservient character. In this one, he seems like, you know, just, you know, your stereotypical Ferengi out for money, out for profit, you know, trying to be a sort of a secondary bartender. And yeah, his character just if there's any character that just hasn't been developed so far, it's been Rom. But, you know, this is the first we see of him, so we got to allow for a little time.
Yeah, he's never a really truly major character in the show anyway.
No, well, I think at this point you've also got to assume Max Grodenchik probably came into this one thinking this was going to be a one-off guest spot. And he came in, he did his job, he went home. And it was only later, when he realised it was going to be a recurring role, that he started thinking, all right, well, how can I make this character interesting to make it worth me spending 4 hours in the makeup chair for?
Yeah, that's, you know, I didn't even consider the makeup aspect of it. I would say, you know, you said a secondary character. I would go as far as to say he's more of a tertiary character. He's secondary is probably not even high enough for him.
Yeah, you know, he does get a lot more to play with further down. I mean, there's an episode of Little Green Men where it's just those three. It's just Quark, Nog, and I've forgotten his name.
Oh,
Rom. Yes, it's Quark, Nog, and Rom throughout the entire episode. So he does get a little bit more to play with, but that was Deep Space Nine did that fantastically. It wasn't just the core seven members of the cast, or however many there are. They built up this loyal subordinate cast that came in and went away as and where they were needed. And it makes sense that it was always something like on Next Gen that bugged me, that we never saw other crew members. You know, Picard and co couldn't have been on shift 12 hours a day and then have nobody come in and relieve them for 12 hours. What were that other shift like? You could have had the entire show with a different cast of characters that never met each other because they're on different shift patterns. And on DS9, I like that they will just bring back people. You won't see Nog and Rom in every episode, but when you do see them, they normally have something interesting to do.
Which you could say for the most part about all the characters. When you do see them, they're not just thrown in there with no purpose. There's a reason for it. There's a plot reason, and it makes the show just much richer as far as its overall writing and just the themes that are going on. Everything seems to have a purpose.
There's a couple. Keiko also gets her own subplot in this episode, which bugged me slightly, because apparently in Starfleet we subscribe to this idea that you can just be a teacher. Doesn't require 4 years of training and a degree. You can just do it. It's not important in any way.
She is a botanist.
Well, all right, so she knows plants. Doesn't mean she can teach children.
Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's nice that, you know, she's trying to do this, but yeah, as you know, obviously, Andy, being a teacher isn't just something that you can just pick up and do. I mean, it's nice that they try and do this, that she's got a sort of plan that she wants to incorporate ideals of, you know, not only Federation education but Bajoran, teach about, you know, various things. And I liked how she sort of tried to sell this to Rom in order to get him to send Nog to the school. You know, I thought it was a nice pitch, but yeah, I have to agree with you. The being a botanist and having the desire to teach doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to be a good teacher.
No, just because she's bored, that's not a reason to give her the job.
I'm going to present a counterpoint on that, because I agree with you. She is not necessarily qualified. She may be, she may not be. It's difficult to know until she actually tries. But I think that what they're showing you is how undeveloped this space station is. There aren't rules. There isn't some sort of infrastructure in there that says to be a teacher you need to have this, 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 and this. In fact, there isn't any plan to have any teachers on the school, on the station, rather. So it's just out there as, you know, no, kids aren't being taught, kids are being allowed to run wild, too bad. And she comes up with a plan for, you know, doing something about it, at least trying. And since there is no infrastructure on it, there is no rules on it, Sisko says, why not? Give it a shot. What the heck? Mm-hmm. Can't hurt.
Maybe she's at night school studying at the same time.
Well, and plus they've got those kick-ass Apple eye chairs as well to work with, so that always helps a lot.
Yeah, do we want to discuss the moral implications of this episode? That Bashir can just grow a person in the infirmary?
That's really...
I know my notes, I wrote something about, I wrote, it says, Bashir talking, and then I put in quotations, science. And then I put, and then I wrote, ethical? Question mark.
Yeah, there's not really much mention about the fact that they just, you know, birthed another full-size living human being, and, you know, well, Bajoran, and, you know, have just released it onto the world with essentially no experience.
No growing up. It doesn't know anything. They've just grown this thing and said, right, go away, see ya. Mm-hmm. Nice meeting you. But that's the plot of this episode is actually quite weak when you start thinking about it, which is why I think we've highlighted the character moments, because that's what sets it apart. The actual plot is he grew a clone of himself and killed it. So there were two of them walking around at some point and nobody spotted that. And as Paul's already mentioned, the ending's very bad.
Why did he have the makings for third clone there?
Well, he didn't.
Is that just for plot convenience?
Basically, there was DNA residue that Bashir picked up in his little quarters, and he put that in a little petri dish and added some magic Starfleet chemicals, and boom.
So there was DNA, and he said, "Let's grow a person out of it."
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
exactly.
That's what I'm saying. What are the moral implications of this? That Dr. Bashir can just take a scrape of somebody's DNA and make a new one of them. So why is he stalking the real Jadzia Dax then? Why does he not just pull a her out of a hairbrush and grow himself his own Jadzia sex toy?
And
or he could just go on the holodeck.
Yeah. He could do that, but if he grows himself a clone, which apparently he can do in mere minutes, he's got a living flesh and blood person, though, not just a holodeck creature.
That's true, and he could, basically tell her, oh, you don't have to worry about, all this, walking around with clothes on thing. Just stay in my quarters and stay over in the corner. I'll feed you occasionally and, be prepared for anything. So, yeah.
I think we have emphasized the character moments, because once you start analyzing the plot to this episode, it doesn't hold up in any way.
That's true. I mean, it's setting up that you're right. It is setting up the characters. It's setting up the relationships between characters. But yeah, as a story, there are some problems with it.
I was going to ask, what do you guys think about my note that this is very derivative of Court-Martial from the original series?
I haven't seen Court-Martial in so long.
Well, basically, there's Finney, I think, and
Finney.
He has a grudge against Captain Kirk, so he fakes his own death, and
puts Kirk
on trial for killing him. And then it turns out he's in the ship, and I think the ending almost seemed similar to me. When they find the real him, it seemed very, very similar to me to that storyline.
It kind of does, but it's not unusual for a Star Trek show, especially these new series, to basically take from the old series and kind of repurpose the episode. Next Gen did that with The Naked Now, which was their second or third episode, which was almost a direct ripoff of the Naked Time.
And let's be fair, it's one of the most maligned episodes of the Next Generation because of how derivative it was.
Oh, and maybe that's why we're not so keen on this episode specifically from a story point or from a story aspect, and we're having to focus on the character development, because it is kind of derivative of the original series.
Yeah, it's got more of that vibe that actions will have consequences, which the Next Generation just avoided. And even the original series did to a certain extent. Kirk fixed many a problem on many a planet where arguably he had no business doing that, and then went, right, see ya, we're off. We've destroyed your godfall, but you'll be better on your own, trust me. And off he goes. Whereas here, you've got the idea that I certainly thought that the Bajoran who's most interested in lynching Odo would have made a good recurring adversary, because he's a scumbag. And he's a slime ball, and he's the worst kind of scumbag and slime ball, in that he's there right in the middle of the crowd, instigating hate. But the minute anything kicks off that could be potentially dangerous or there could be trouble, he just slinks to the back. And I thought that actor did a really good job of being that kind of guy who stands in the middle, stirs up trouble, and then disappears, and then just goes, well, it's now doing me. And I would have liked to see more of him, because there's an interesting idea here that he could have been in trouble at some point and had to go to Odo. And Odo would have been, yeah, I remember you. You were the guy that wanted to hang me by the neck. Why should I help you? And then there could have been a conflict there between Odo having to do his job and Odo absolutely hating the guy that he was trying to save. But they never brought this guy back, which was a shame, because I thought he was really good.
Yeah, that is kind of unfortunate. He is one of those characters that is just... It's one of those slimy, underhanded characters who's borderline, well, you know, obviously bigoted, but almost racist. You know, he's, you know, calling him shifter. It's almost like he's, you know, that he's yelling, you know, racial epithets at Odo. He's a thoroughly unlikable character, and yeah, it would have been nice to see him developed a little bit more. But you know, since this is you know, just like the second or third episode that's been filmed, you know, maybe they just didn't have, you know, have a direction for him.
Which is a shame, because I think bringing him back would have been interesting. But that's the whole subtext of the episode, isn't it? Bigotry is the subject of the episode, as pointed out by Sisko at the end when he stands up and gives an impassioned speech about it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I would be remiss if I didn't mention the fact that I'm pretty sure I saw Morn in the mob scene.
Yep. So Morn has been in all of the episodes so far. Yeah, he was in the mob scene. And he was also in the bar when Odo came to sit down. You know, he moved away from Odo.
No, I think
Odo.
That was somebody else.
Was that not?
Because I saw that and I thought, oh, there's Morn. But then they flipped it around and you saw the face and it wasn't.
Hmm. Okay.
I'm pretty sure. Again, we're 2 weeks removed from my watching it, but I'm pretty sure that was not Morn in the bar.
Okay, but at least Morn was in the episode. And it's sad that Morn sort of, you know, gave in to the mob mentality. Just
yeah, you wouldn't expect that from him.
Well, maybe that's just Morn. Maybe it's just like, hey, maybe there's going to be drinking after this. So.
Yeah, maybe Morn just thought there was a free beer in it. I mean, if Odo gets lynched, that's just a sad byproduct of it. But hey, free beer. Did you notice that when they investigate Ibudin's itinerary, he'd stopped over at Alderaan for a bit?
What?
Oh no, I didn't see that.
When you freeze for it, the thing with Deep Space Nine, like later episodes of Next Generation, it was Mike Okuda who did all the graphics, and there is always some really cute in-jokes in those graphics, and I've started freeze-framing to have a look at them. And he departed from the Alderaan spaceport.
Well, thank God he got away in time.
Yeah, before the Death Star blew it up. And throughout the series, it's worth keeping your eye on them, because Mike Okuda slips some really interesting little in-jokes into it. Like, there's a couple where you discover that the Enterprise was built by Yo-Yo Dyne Propulsion.
Oh my God.
So there's loads, so watch out. Whenever you see a graphic, pause it and have a look if there's anything cool on it, because it is worth looking at for what Mike Okuda slips in.
See, because I you know, we're going to go ahead and talk a little bit about the next episode, but there was a little thing in there where Kira was looking at some report on, you know, the terrorist group, and I'll have to go back and look at that, see if there was anything in that. So, yeah, that's interesting.
Okudagrams are well worth looking at, because he always does something with it. So all the characters get something to do. The makeup's still a little bit off on Odo in this one. There's still more of René Auberjonois' face, isn't there?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Than there would be later.
Yeah, he's not just the shellacked, you know, place, you know, a pound of, you know, pancake makeup on him yet. You can still see some of his, you know, facial features. But, you know, this is a good character. This is a good character episode. Not so good a story episode.
I think along the character lines also, I think they did a good job of showing the relationship between Odo and Kira. They show that the two of them have a bond, which eventually does develop into more as the show goes on. But I don't think they even had that in mind at this point in the series. But it is already just building that relationship. And I think we had some basically unintentional foreshadowing of where their relationship is going to go later in the series.
Mm-hmm. And I think, like I said, we'll get more into that in the next episode. You know, so I'm like I said, I'm liking how characters are being set up. I'm liking how relationships are being set up, except for Bashir, because he's crap in this first or second episode. But, you know, I'm thinking things are really looking well. You know, they just need to get better stories.
Along the characterization line, I also thought they did a real good job with Sisko. Basically, he made a mistake in letting Odo run the investigation. He should have never done that, especially when you consider, just the fact that he is the prime suspect, and you would never, ever let the prime suspect run the investigation. But when he decides to take it away from him, he really does kind of turn on a dime, and he loses his temper a little bit, which I kind of read into it as him just being upset with himself for letting things get out of hand the way they have. And I thought it was very well written and very, very well acted by Avery Brooks.
Well, and you kind of had to think that pretty much once, Odo admitted that the only person who could have done this would have been someone who could have slipped under the door, and he kind of admitted himself that only a changeling could have done this, Sisko's first reaction was, well, I have to take him off the case because, it's a conflict of interest. So I don't think there was that much of delay between that, but, I can understand at the beginning, having Odo, there is a bit of a feeling of impropriety if you've got Odo investigating this case where he might be the main suspect behind the murder.
And who else would have investigated it? Who else would he have assigned to do this? Maybe mm-hmm. Kira, I suppose? Although we do see that Odo does have deputies.
Mm-hmm. But,
so maybe... Yeah, maybe one of them.
Very ineffectual deputies.
Yeah, very crap ones. Yes. Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe I'm just more excited about talking about the next episode because, this was okay, but.
Sure, you want to take my episode from.
Oh.
Yeah, I think it's the character moments make it work. The plot's very, very, very woolly. Not a great one to go into after the pilot.
I think some of that has to do with the fact that this was written before the actors were cast, in all likelihood. And they weren't exactly sure where they were going to go yet, so you had to give them a little time to find their feet. And they just had to put together a story, with a little bit of spit and glue.
Yeah. Well, I think for, just either the second episode of a show, it's definitely a pretty good one. It's not outstanding, but I've definitely seen worse.
It's better than The Naked Now.
Yes, very much. I think we can all agree on that.
I mean, that's not really, saying high standards. I mean, I've had things, floating in the toilet better than Naked Now, but that's just me.
Well, that was like when we did our review of Godzilla. and were you on that, Sean?
Yeah.
And the overwhelming talk was, well, it's not Jaws. and I said, well, that's a really tough standard to set, that if every movie we're going to review has to be as good as or better than Jaws to give it a high rating. That's a kind of a tough standard.
Yeah, well, I guess we can probably apply this show to that as well. Yeah, this show, it's not Jaws.
but it's almost like, well, you know what? If it's better than The Naked Now, we're giving it a thumbs up.
Maybe it's somewhere in between. Maybe it can be like the Deep Blue Sea. So, the standard of Jaws. So it's not quite Naked Now, and it's not quite Jaws. So it's sort of Deep Blue Sea. Would we go for that? I could give it that parallel.
I'd rather watch this than The Naked Now any day of the week, because at least the character interactions this work, and at least the acting's good. The acting in The Naked Now is risible.
Mm-hmm. As an overall rating on this episode, I'm going to say better than The Naked Now, not as good as Jaws.
Yep.
Better than The Naked Now, not as good as whatever the second episode of the original Star Trek was. Was it Charlie X?
Yeah, I think that was it Charlie X, or was it Where No Man Has Gone Before? I thought...
Well, Where No Man Has Gone Before was the second pilot.
Okay.
Yeah, in her day,
first one aired was Man Trap.
It was the Man Trap. Man Trap, Charlie X, then Where No Man Has Gone Before.
Okay, there
you go. So it's not as good as Charlie X by any measure, but it pees all over The Naked Now.
I'll agree with that. So do we want to read email? We do actually have a couple of emails from people. Do you want to read a couple of those?
Time we could squeeze in an email or two.
Okay, I've got... we've got an email here from Aaron Henley, and I don't know if he's written in yet to any other shows, but he's written in here, and the email is about episode one, which I guess is the actual episode one we did. It goes, hello, Sean, Paul, and Andy. And to make sure Scott Gardner actually listens to this show, hey, Scott. He's not going to listen to the show. Bastard. He says, I've been a longtime listener to Just One of the Guys and Hey Kids Comics. Good man. But I've never written
him. I'm back to the bins.
He said, hold on. Don't jump the gun. But I've tried, but usually my emails always seem to sound like fanboy gushing about the high quality podcast.
Hey, we have no problem with fanboy gushing.
gush away, my friend.
And for my sparkling interest in the various topics discussed. Sorry, Paul, but I haven't checked out Back to the Bins, but it is on my podcast to-do list. So I guess we're done with this email, aren't we?
No, as long as he's willing to rectify that mistake, I have no problem.
All right, then.
There's an awful lot of episodes before he gets to you, though.
Yeah, start.
Oh, if he's going
to
start from episode one, yeah, he's got a long way to go.
You know, start around episode 93? Is that where you came in, Paul?
I came in on. It's almost sad that I know this right off the top of my head. I came in on 86.
86. There you go. So start there, and you'll be certain to love Back to the Bins. Anyway,
well, that's what I say. The show didn't truly start until I came on.
Aaron continues, now two of my favorite podcasters, I'm got to assume that it's Paul and Andy, are getting into my favorite Star Trek show, yes, even over the original series. I think I can attribute this to how the show had a more serialized nature of an overarching narrative, but allowing individual stories to occur. Also, I was 12 years old and heavily into the Star Wars camp when the Dominion War started, and I was like, oh, looky, Star Trek ships do shoot at each other, and I was hooked. I never understood why the show was so divisive amongst the fans. To me, the characters seemed to be actual human beings, prone to self-doubt, greed, personal secrets, integrity, honor, and self-sacrifice, with events from one episode affecting the character throughout the show, rather than, well, that's the end of the episode, and everything went back to normal with no lasting repercussions. There are so many episodes ingrained into my memory and that I look forward to hearing someone else's opinions on and discussing it later. I've listened to only the first 10 minutes, and I'm a listener for life. Well, good. We've got you hooked. We're, you know, the first one's free, kids. So far, I only have one comment on the episode. Emissary was my first exposure to the pivotal battle of Wolf 359. Watching so many Starfleet vessels being destroyed with such ease really drove home to me how big the threat of the Borg truly were. I hadn't seen the Next Generation two-parter Best of Both Worlds at the time, so I was really excited to see it even more of the... So I was really excited to see even more of the battle as I heard it was in the episode. When I finally saw it, it was only the aftermath, and I went, that's it? Really? What a jip. Yes, I just insulted the most cherished episodes of The Next Generation, but I'm a Star Wars kid at heart, and so not seeing an epic battle that the entire survival of humanity depended upon just insulted the 14-year-old in me. There's a lot more I'm looking forward to hearing and talking about, but that'll be after I finish and figure I've rambled on way too long as it is. So thanks for the hard work, as I know it can't be easy to line up so many different time zones. Oh, don't even know. But I will say, as long as you keep it up, you'll always have one fan out there waiting for the next episode. Sincerely, Aaron Henley.
Well, thank you, Aaron.
That was really nice. You know, I have to agree, you know, I was kind of disappointed as well. Watching, you know, I know that they've done some fan edits that sort of incorporated the Wolf 359 battle at the beginning of Emissary, at the beginning of Emissary into Best of Both Worlds, and I'd like to see, you know, I may go check that out, but yeah, it was kind of disappointing, you know, if you had seen Deep Space Nine first and, you know, saw this epic battle, and then you go watch Best of Both Worlds and like, oh, it's a bunch of wrecked ships, so...
Yeah, but from the point of view of the Best of Both Worlds, the Enterprise isn't in that battle.
Yeah.
So, and the Best of Both Worlds is told from the point of view of the Enterprise crew. So, it's understandable that you don't see it. And certainly it didn't bug me on first watch, because I saw them as they erred. But, yeah, I can understand going back to it, having seen the beginning of Deep Space Nine, and going, well, is that it?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, do you want me to read this, or do you want to read it, Andy?
Ahead. I don't mind.
Okay, our next email is from Gene Hendricks of the Hammer Strikes podcast and the Quantum Cast. Sean, Andy, and Paul, great show. As a longtime DS9 fan, I was really happy to hear that you were starting a podcast about it. I always looked at this show, like Paul and Sean said, as a Gunsmoke/Rifleman version of Star Trek's Wagon Train. The story arcs that they did also really appealed to me. especially with Sisko and Worf eventually. Of course, being a longtime Trek fan, as I went over in episode 2 of my own show, The Hammer Podcasts, also on Two True Freaks,
plug,
I originally didn't like DS9. The idea of boldly staying just didn't make sense to me. But as the show went on, it convinced me. Part of that was probably because of Avery Brooks' subtle but powerful acting. Part of it was also due to my liking Chief O'Brien from TNG. Most of it, though, I'm not ashamed to say, was due to Nana Visitor and Terry Farrell. Hey, I was 17 at the time. I do agree that this was probably one of the best ensemble casts of all the shows, but it seemed like the writers didn't quite know what to do with them all in the first season or so. That being said, the fact that they grew over the course of the show and even got promoted, shock and awe, made up for this. Like you guys said, I knew of a good portion of these actors prior to the show being on, thanks to reruns, and it was interesting seeing the various takes on the Trek universe. As I am also a love of Babylon 5, the first four seasons anyway, I would like to point out to you a series of blog posts about that show. Beyond looking at B5 episode by episode, the author also compares each to what similarly happened on DS9. That was to what happened on DS9 that was similar, even down to sharing actors. Of course, now I have another show to add to my watch-rewatch list. I have to stop listening to Andy's shows or I won't have any time left. Gene.
I'm sure there are other shows you can stop listening to that aren't mine.
No, I think what he's saying is that every time he listens to you, you're giving him a new TV show to watch, like Alias Smith and Jones or Quantum Leap or whatever.
UFO, Battlestar Galactica. Going
hey, if I'm just improving your TV watching, I'm quite happy with that.
Well, you know, thanks, Gene, for writing in. Like I said, you know, Gene's over at the Two True Freaks website with the Quantum Cast and the Hammer Strikes podcast. Plus, he does Legend of the Superheroes as well. That's really fun. So far, he's talked about the Incredible Hulk. I think he hasn't done the actual Legend of the Superheroes show yet. Do any of you remember seeing that?
Yeah, he does it actually as part of his Hammer Strikes podcast.
Oh, okay.
I was on one of them already. We did the Batman.
Yeah, you're on the Batman one.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, it was
and
good.
And he's also done the Hulk.
Yeah, but
and
he hasn't.
He did one other, and it's off the top of my head. I'm not coming up.
I think he did Swamp Thing, and Rob Kelly from Aquaman Shrine was on that. The Swamp Thing movie with Adrian Barbeau. Wow.
Adrian Barbeau was on the show.
No, oh, we could only wish Adrian Barbeau was on the show. Wish Adrian Barbeau was on. Oh, never mind. Yeah, but that's thanks, guys, for writing in emails. The email address for the show is listentotheprophets@gmail.com. If you want to write in, tell us how we're doing, tell us your thoughts on the show, tell us whether you like the story of this one. You know, we'd love to hear from you, and we'd love to read the letters on the show.
Yeah, I mean, if there's anything about the format of this show that you think, oh, it would benefit if we added or anything like that, I'd also be, you know, interested in hearing that, because despite contrary evidence, we always want to do better.
Yes.
greeted with dead silence. I don't want to do better.
No, I'm just happy with average. I can hang out with that.
I strive for mediocrity.
Yes, you know, if you just go average, you know, when you do impressive, then yeah, people think that's really great. So, you know, don't set the bar too high. That's my philosophy.
Something to be said for that.
Well, I think that wraps it up for this week then.
No problem. Well, we're going to try and hopefully get these out every couple of weeks. You know, we're going to record a couple today and, you know, hopefully get them out every 2 weeks. So hopefully you'll be hearing this, hearing the next episode, the next episode here in a couple of weeks. So thanks everyone for tuning in, and we'll see you next time.
Before you totally Goodbye. Sign out, Andy, what's coming up next time?
Next time on an all-new episode of Listen to the Prophets, Kira does some terrorist stuff. It's all very interesting. Past prologue, that's next week. Hope you'll join us. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
visit our website at twotruefreaks.com. Two True Freaks is always spelled TWOTRUEFREAKS.
You can email Two True Freaks directly at twotruefreaks@gmail.com.
Two True Freaks and all of its excellent affiliates are available on iTunes, and you can choose to subscribe to either the entire network if you wish, or pick whichever individual shows you want to follow. We have so many shows to choose from, there's just bound to be one that appeals to your particular fandom. Just search Two True Freaks with an exclamation mark at the end, space, and the number 2.
You can find Two True Freaks on Facebook. Just search for Two True Freaks. If you ever leave your house and you actually have friends, why don't you tell them about Two True Freaks?
If you've enjoyed our show, please, won't you take a moment to rate us on iTunes? That helps others find the show, too.
Thanks for listening.
And join us every Monday for new episodes of
Two True Freaks.
Do you guys want to read an email? We've got a couple in the Listen to the Prophets one. Do you want to read any of those? Do you have
how many have we got?
We've got 3 altogether. We've got one from Gene.
I don't have anything open. I'd have to open it up.
I've got another.
Yeah, how do we access this email?
Go to Gmail, then go the name of the login is listentotheprophets@gmail.com. And the password is
word.
Yes, all one word.
Listen to the prophets at gmail.com. This is fascinating podcasting.
Mm-hmm. Well, this will all be edited out in the end, so it'll be.
This will be edited to make it longer.
I'm going to put the Jeopardy theme in here, so it'll help.
Okay.
It's the username for Two True Freaks is the password.
And is that a capital?
No, it's all lowercase.
Nobody's ever hacking this, baby.
No.
Not with security like that.
Yeah,
I'm your recovery email address. What's my recovery email address?
We got 3 emails here. We got Chuck Rodriguez, Gene. Luke Giaconetti, and Gene. Right? Gene
Hendrix, yeah.
And I can't access it.
Okay. I'll take the next. Which one?
Okay,
enter
do you want
your
to...
recovery email address.
Looks like Gene is the first of the 3, so maybe I'll do that.
Let's see. Okay. Recovery email address. Shit.
It begins with J and ends with X, so it's Joe Anthrax.
Joe Anthrax said.
At.
Yeah, see if that's it.
Maybe it's sulking because we're all trying to.
Yeah.
That doesn't match the email on file.
Okay,
that's
Joe
because
Anthrax
I missed an H out.
Oh, okay.
There we go.
Okay.
So it's probably sulking because we're all accessing it at the same time.
No problem.
Right, all right. So if we do...
Here's my suggestion. Why don't we read Gene's email, which will leave 2, and then we'll do the next 2 in the next episode.
Sounds good.
Yeah. Okay.
This way we do 2 each.
Fair enough.
Okay.